Right in my eyes. But I can live. I can survive it. Good morning, everyone. We do have some people who are normally here that are out of town, I think. We've got Mike and Tanya Franklin are at Graham Street today where he's preaching. And he does also preach up at Squim. I think he's up at Squim once a month. And he's at Graham Street every fifth Sunday, I think, is what his deal is. So we'll be missing them this morning. Should see them tonight. And then Jeff Clark is preaching in Tacoma this morning. And I know the Eccles, Roger Eccles' family, are gone down south for a week. So a few of our regulars for Sunday morning class are not here. But we're here, so we can rejoice, right? That we have the opportunity to be together, and I certainly am encouraged a lot by you being here, and we're drawing really close to the end of our marriage series, and not that we couldn't go on for month and month more for a lot, but there's just, you know, we plan on a certain amount of things that we would cover, and we're kind of sticking to that. We're getting close to the end of my part in the marriage series, because whether next week or whenever it is, Andrew's going to be going into the divorce and remarriage subject on marriage, and that's left him the most controversial, difficult part. You know, I figured I'd handle the easy stuff and let Andrew do the stuff that takes some intelligence. But we'll have more to say about that when the time comes. I am circling through to remember where I left off, who led prayer last week, and since Scott just sat down, you were over there. Well, then Scott's next. Scott, could you direct us in prayer? Amen. We've covered a lot of material over the last, I think I have 30 or 31 classes that we've done, something like that. And if you're like me, you're not going to remember much of it at all. So that's why I'm going to be sending out, I've sent out a few outlines already, but I'll send out the completed series, my completed series on this particular class, both the outline and the PowerPoint slides. And if you had some way just to file it away, then someday if you wanted to draw back to it or remember it, you can do that. Helps me a lot when I can get the outlines of people's classes and be able to turn back to them when I need to. Okay, so we're in solving some marriage problems is the section we're kind of in. We're just down to the last couple, and we're in the middle of dealing with money, finances, and in marriage. And, of course, in all parts of our life, money has a part, and it can be a problem or it can be a benefit, depending how we look at it. The attitude. What are the three most important attitudes about money that you need to have? The first one. Be content with whatever you have. That is the secret. The Bible even says that's the secret. Okay, number two, hard work, or work hard. If you will be content with what you have and work hard, you will be doing exactly what the Bible describes and commands. And then number three, charity. Make sure that always in your mind is the willingness to share with those who need, who have need. So those were the three most important principles that I think we can look at that really help you as you go along day by day. Am I really handling my money properly? Or do I have the right attitude toward money, actually, in the way that I'm using it, in the way that I'm being a steward of what God has given me? And then we're looking at this subject of managing money, and we've covered, this passage. I love this passage. I want to read it again. I love it so much. 1 Corinthians 29, verse 11 and 12. The first most important thing we need to realize when it comes to managing money is that it all belongs to God, right? It says here, "Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. Indeed, everything that is in the heavens and on the earth." And the earth. "Yours is the dominion, O Lord, and you exalt yourself as head over all. Both riches and honor come from you. And you rule over all. And in your hand is power and might, and it lies in your hand to make great and to strengthen everyone." We read another few verses that talked about everything belongs to God. We are just stewards. In other words, we have the responsibility to use and handle the things that God has given us that we have for just a while. They're really His. He gives them to us to enjoy, and He gives them to us so that we will use them to His glory and to the benefit of others. Okay? All right, so everything belongs to God. We talked about the first principle as far as managing money is saving. Real quickly through these verses, Proverbs 13, verse 11. Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. That's the thing. God, the principle is we need to save. Those that will say, hold on a minute. No, yeah, second one here. Proverbs 21, verse 20. Precious treasure and oil are in the wise man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours it. So we talked about the wise man, the godly person, sets a little bit aside all the time. All of a sudden, laying aside. The foolish man just uses it all up. All the time. I mean, everybody, you know how it is. You spend what you make. It's kind of a saying. Well, that's not a biblical principle. You shouldn't spend all you make. You need to lay it aside. And then also, there's the charity part, right? Okay, in Proverbs 13, verse 22, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. Okay, let's see. Remember this part of the passage we just read, which we're going to talk about being rich here for a few passages. Remember this part? Well, the question, I guess, basically is it a sin to be rich? No. Because there are rich people in the Bible that are talked about. The thing is, if you're rich, it's God who made you rich. All right? And we talked about how that we're not supposed to be wanting to be rich. We don't want to be having that as our goal. Our deal is contentment, hard work, and charity is the main principles. But God does make certain people rich. The key is, if God has made us rich, which really in this room, most of us at least are mildly rich, we have a lot more than we need. So we fall into this category. No, we're not a Bill Gates, We're not Jeff Bezos. Is that the guy who owns Google? He's supposed to be catching up and maybe going to be the first trillionaire, who knows? We're not that rich. And that's what we think of sometimes when we think about people being rich. We have a lot more than we need. We have a lot of extra things. So we fall into this category. So what do we want to make sure that we do if we're with our riches? Well, here it says in Luke 12, verse 16 through 21, here's this example of the rich young ruler. And I told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man was very productive. Maybe this isn't, let's see. Well, let's keep reading. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? Then he said, this is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grains and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Who made this guy rich? God did. God allowed him to become rich. It's God's power you can work as hard, and you can become rich, or you can work hard, not make a whole lot. It doesn't always depend. Usually the proverb is you'll make profit, but God brought this person into riches, and he says he's going to go ahead and, build these larger barns, store all these things up. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Okay, the condemnation here isn't that he was rich and that he had a lot. The problem is that all he thought about was enjoying it or storing it up. And so he could have all these things, and that was his key thing. He thought about himself. He didn't think about God. He didn't think about the charity part. He was somebody who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. That we cannot do. That is something that is totally unlike God. God is somebody, would you call God rich? Of course, he's the richest being there ever was. Everything belongs to him. And he is the one who makes others supplies the needs of others. He's the one that actually makes other people rich. He is so generous and giving. And every example you can see in the Old Testament, we could spend hours looking at all of them, and especially with him giving the riches of his family in heaven, his son on the cross. So that is what God wants us to be like. He wants us to be like him. So if we're rich, which we are pretty much by any definition, we have a lot more than we need. Don't just be saving it up. We talked about one of the principles is that you save little by little, but if you just save and save and save and amass, and you got all this stuff, and boy, you are secure, right? Now we're going to see again, that's also the wrong attitude. In the next passage, he's going to say, you don't depend on all that stuff you got. Don't do that, because it's not something you can depend on. But if you just save it up and use it for yourself, for your security, and not haven't spent some to serve God, haven't laid by in store in a generous way on when we take our collections every week, or haven't given to the needs of others, no, you're not like a God at all. So that's something, as we're saving, we want to make sure that key in our thought is one of those first three things. We're going to be giving to those who have need, and we're going to be serving God. We're going to be using some of our monies to accomplish his purpose. Okay, next passage here in 1 Timothy 6, verse 17 through 19. Paul says, instruct those who are rich in this present world, so I'd be everybody here, not to be conceited or to fix your hope on the uncertainty of riches. So we don't want to be thinking, hey, I've got all this stuff. Man, I am set and secure. No, it could be gone tomorrow. The stock market could be in the tank. You know, whatever you've got, you could lose. So don't do that. Don't set your hope on the uncertainty of riches, but set it on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Now, there's a good point right there. God gives us things. Why? Because he's generous, but because he wants us to enjoy them. So, but here's this balance. We don't want to be like the last guy who spent it all on himself, right? Yeah, we enjoy the things God gives us. He gives us richly all these things to enjoy. But here's the instruction we're given. Paul says, instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. Wow, there's so much in that passage. Just take a minute. I mean, what's the real treasure? You think we're rich now, but what's the real riches that we're looking forward to? Yeah, that's what it is. So, I mean, you can exchange the crown in heaven and be like the last guy here who just could store all his stuff up and keep it to himself? Is that how you're going to be? Don't be like that. What a terrible exchange. The glory of heaven given away for a lump of gold. It's going to burn up, you know. So when we act like this, when we're good and we're generous, we're storing up a treasure in the future, a treasure that's much greater than any riches we've got now, right? Eternal life with the God who made everything. So what's the instruction? Do good. That word good doesn't just mean to do right instead of wrong. That word within it means that you are somebody who is generous. It's somebody who does more than is right. Over there, well, I'll go there. Don't spend the time. But like Romans 5 talks about, you know, who would die for a righteous man, peradventure for a good man, somebody would die. A good man is not somebody who is only right. It starts there. But it's somebody who looks out for others. He considers more than himself. And that's what this commandment is, this instruction, to do good, to be rich in good works, be generous and ready to share, which, of course, fits into our principle back we talked about, contentment, work hard, and then charity, giving to the need. So you and I, as we have more than we need, save some, right? Give some. But enjoy, right? God gives us, usually, especially people in this room, not always. There's times when you only have enough to survive and you don't have enough to share. But I've never known a time like that. I don't care how little I had. I never knew a time where I couldn't give something to somebody else. I never, not in my life. Some countries, maybe. There's some people who don't have enough to eat. But not here, not in this country. Never seen that. Maybe you have, but I didn't live through the Depression. That might have been a time when it was like that. I, you know, or there were some people who were like that. But so, as we save this money, how do we manage it? We can enjoy it, we save it, and we give it. Any questions up to this point? Okay, on to the next one. So that's about saving. What about borrowing? All right, borrowing. Is it okay to borrow money? Should we borrow money? Is it wise to borrow money? Now, this is so much application because a lot of people start out their married life not being able to afford everything they have. And so they borrow to get some furniture or to get some appliances. And, you know, because when you start out, you don't have a nest egg. You haven't had much time to lay by. The wedding probably cost a fortune, so you're broke. I mean, I don't know, whatever reason, you don't usually have a lot of resources. So what about borrowing? Well, the Bible doesn't say a whole lot about it, but there are some principles we want to realize that will help us to make a decision about this. Understand this, Proverbs 22, verse 7. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave of the lender. Now, does that mean it's a sin to borrow? No. And we're going to see it's not. But just realize this, that if you get yourself in a position, and again, I'm talking about when you, that you can't help, or that you can help, that really, well, you know, if I would have been better with my money, I wouldn't have to go out and get this loan just to make a payment on something. Realize this principle. You know, be wise with what you have and be the person who's laying something aside all the time so when there's an emergency, you've got something. Or when somebody else has an emergency, you've got something to help because the borrower is a slave. You serve somebody else. The resources which you could be earning on your, the interest you could be earning on your money, which also helps you to save, somebody else is earning on your money. You're paying them interest. And you know, you've got, you're not free. You've got a debt that you owe, and you've got to pay it. So just realize that that's the difficulty. There's some difficulty there. That when you're borrowing, it's better basically not to borrow. Proverbs 22, 27. Yeah, be not one of those who gives pledges. This is a little different, but who put up security for debts. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should your bed be taken from under you? There's been times when people either pledge or they borrow so much that they can't pay it, whether you're pledging for somebody else or borrowing yourself, and they come and they take everything you've got. That's not a good thing. So, better not to put yourself in that spot where you're owing and even to the point of where you can't pay and then you lose everything. Makes sense. I mean, these are biblical principles. This comes from God, right? Here's a one of the, I guess you could call it, curses that is described over here in Deuteronomy 28, verse 43 and 44. This is the context of Mount Gerizim and Ebal, where the curses came on, were pronounced on Judea for the sin that they, if they got into certain sin, if they would leave God, that all these curses, big list of curses, and then they went to Mount Gerizim and God pronounced on them all the blessings they would have if they would obey him. This just is one of the ones that's in the list of curses here. So it helps you understand, you know, where we are when we're talking about borrowing and being and owing money. Deuteronomy 28, verse 43 and 44. The alien who is among you shall rise above you higher and higher, but you will go down lower and lower. He shall lend to you, but you will not lend to him. He shall be the head, you will be the tail. This is just a little part of this list of passages about the curses that will come upon people. And one of them is that the people would rise up and they would rule over them and they would have to borrow money from them. And that wasn't a good thing. That was a curse. Okay, so there's some warnings about what can happen when we borrow, when we get ourselves in a position when and we have to borrow money. But what does it say? Matthew 5, 42. Give to him who asks you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. Somebody needs something, don't turn away. You lend it to him. Yeah, but then won't he fall under all the troubles that we just read about? You know how that, you know, he's going to be my slave and he's, well, those are things you need to keep in mind. There's a balance here. Somebody needs something, you give it to them. Don't let them go hungry. Don't let them go without shelter. If they need to borrow something from you that they can be able to keep on going and surviving and continuing in what they need to do, then you lend it to them. That's a principle that Jesus gives. And you know, in some ways, it obviously reflects how God, all the things he has, he gives to us. So we need to be ready to do that. The verses we read before, when you put yourself at such a risk to owe others and be indebted, and you're indebted to others, and be that you're going to be their slave. So we do need to be giving when people need something. But realize also, in Psalm 37, verse 21, the wicked borrows and does not pay back. If you're going to borrow something, the first thing in your mind needs to be, I'm going to give it back as soon as I can. I'm going to pay it back. Because it says, the wicked borrows and does not pay back, but the righteous is gracious and gives. Just a proverb comparing two things. Sometimes we need to borrow. Thinking back on, I know there's been times when people would lend us some money. We didn't ask for it. This was basically Sue's parents when we bought our first house, helped us with a down payment. That's a little different when you're dealing with family, likely. In fact, when it came time to pay them back and had the money to pay them back, they didn't want it. And you know, that's pretty common, you know, in families. But we never borrowed money that I can think of that we didn't have. But oftentimes in our lives, it can happen. Be careful. You're gonna promise to pay back. We don't control all the circumstances in our life. God does. The principles are save, 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 save. Be generous, if you're going to borrow, if you need to borrow, follow these principles that you are going to pay back. Here's a principle, basically, that if we can live by it, again, it's basically a proverb, Romans 13, verse 8, owe nothing to anyone except to love one another, for he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. Now, you know why I know that's not an absolute command, that's a sin to owe something to somebody? How do I know that? How do I know it's not? It's saying, yeah, it's a sin if you owe. It says, owe nothing, no, but nobody. I look at the other passages we've read, and they authorize borrowing. You borrow. Somebody borrows from you, you lend to them. So I know this is not an absolute proverb, or not an absolute command, but it is a way to live that is when we're going to be happier if we do this. If we get ourselves in a situation where I owe the bank something, and boy, I borrowed something from my brother, you know, 2 years ago, and I haven't paid him a cent back, and the guy that I'm renting from, you know, I'm way behind, I owe him, and what does that do, you know, especially to a young married couple, I tell you, and not even just a young married couple. It doesn't matter if you're younger, if you've been married 10 years. You put that kind of pressure on your marriage, you don't think you're going to have some problems or temptation for problems? You very much likely are. And I've seen it again and again. Money problems. Well, it's just, you know, every week, it's like the paycheck doesn't cover. And, you know, we owe this. Don't get there to begin with. Don't owe anybody anything except a spiritual grace to love each other. You know, that's the insight that we have from our God that will so much reduce the challenge and the pressures that money can be if we don't handle it, you know, in a wise way. Don.
You know, you could change that, you know, owe nothing to anyone. Well, it's up to love them, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I had borrowed money from you and I said I was going to pay it back, mm-hmm. and I love you, I pay it back because of the love, right?
Sure.
So that could even be applied there, saying, well, you know, even owing money, you're paying it back out of love.
Yeah.
So all you owe to the person is your love that you're going to pay it back, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, borrowing and paying back and interest and all that's a principal driver of our economy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as Christians, if somebody borrows something from us and they can't pay it back, we don't lend it to them, we give it to them.
Right.
And then if they can't pay it back, fine.
Forgive them of their debt? What?
Right.
Well, that's a pretty strange thing to be asking people to do. Forgive them of their debts? Is Don right in that? Is that what we should do when it doesn't have to be all the time, but should we forgive people their debts? Do we want God to forgive us of our debts?
Amen.
You know, God, you forgive us of our debts as we forgive others. Yeah, that's just talking about when they do something wrong. That's not talking about money, is it?
Reminds me of a few proverbs that Jesus said, you know, few parables that Jesus gave too, right?
Yeah, you got some on top of your head? There's a lot. This is actually the last of what we're talking. There's a lot we could be talking about. If this was a study on finances, we could be week after week. But we're hitting these top parts just so that we give ourselves that inoculation, you know, of how these basic principles to help us deal with money in a way that will not be a stumbling block in our family, because we don't need that. We don't need that kind of stumbling block. Okay. Anybody else? That's all we have to say about finances as far as marriage. Remember those three primary principles, and remember that God owns everything and that we just have it for a while. And certainly there's a lot more we could be looking at, but we're going to move on to marriage with children. Question came up, like 2-3 years ago in this class. Well, I guess we haven't done the class that long. It was a few months ago about what's the priority in marriage? Is it your wife, husband-wife relationship, or is it your children? Is it okay to let your children start interfering with your marriage responsibilities? And we put that off until now, okay? So because we wanted to put off those kind of practical challenges and problems to this point when we dealt with the challenges that can come up in marriage. So I think there was a series called Married with Children. I never saw it. Don't know if it's good or bad. This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about marriage and then the children that come along as God designed, which not every marriage has. And certainly not every marriage has children, you know, in the first year. Some people wait a couple years, maybe three. Sue and I were 4 years before we had any children. How it happened. So there was a time we lived together when it was just her and me, and of course the Christian brothers and work and responsibility, but it was just went home, it was just us. And we just that we were it was there were no distractions. Just us. I remember back on those times. Anyway, they were great. They were really good. So let's look at this for a bit. When you have children, it's an entirely different ball game, completely. I mean, do the math. Let's see, I used to be one. Now I'm two. Two for a while. But there comes number three. And four and five. I mean, it's almost a baseball team. Some people do have baseball teams, basically, in their family. They have that many kids, I think. But it's completely different. Completely different. And that's the way it was supposed to be. And we'll look and see here in just a bit. But let's see. One of these guys comes along. Oh, life is changing, let me tell you. First day he comes home, life is different, right? One of these guys comes along and all the things that they need, all the love that they need, everything that they need, things are never the same again. Just the way it is. And then when you think, you know, two or three of these guys show up, or gals or whatever, show up, and you got the challenges that they have and the way to learning how to take care of them. And then in a few years, they turn into one of these. And then you thought you had it easy back here. Believe me, you do. So I'm not trying to scare anybody off. But just trying to wake you up to a reality. A family that's just husband and wife is a very simple equation. When you start putting more of these people in here, you've got a different equation. And if we're not careful, we can let this wonderful gift of children turn into, or actually interfere with our loving relationship and responsibilities in marriage. And we don't want to let that happen. We don't want to let that happen. Children are a wonderful blessing. Let's start off with that real quickly. Wonderful blessing and make married life more enjoyable. That's God's design. You look back at the very beginning, Genesis 1, verse 28. After it talks about a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. And then verse 28, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. You know, having a husband and wife together in general, in principle, and not having children, which is okay, would be like to have an apple tree that didn't have apples. There's no fruit. I mean, the apple tree is there to produce fruit. Part of our reason that we have this marriage relationship is so that we can be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Now, some people say, well, the earth is already filled. Does this command really apply? Well, it's just everybody stop having children for 100 years, and where are we? Nobody here.
It's
not, yeah. No, I mean, I can see how that would take care of some in one way, but I don't think that's the right solution. Turn to God is the right solution. But yeah, it still applies. Being fruitful is part of why God arranged this husband and wife, this marriage to begin with. It's so that we can bring the fruit of life into the world. There's a lot we could say about that, but we're not. We're going to go on to some other things. We talked about these passages a couple of times. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward, like arrows in the hand of a warrior. I think Roger did a lesson a week or two ago. Talked about this and did such a good job. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are children of one's youth. And also, Robert, didn't you do the arrow thing? You did. He talked about arrows a few days ago. Robert did a lesson on children, and he talked about... No, that was Richard. Yeah, Richard did that. Okay, like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. What's the key meaning of blessed? Happy. You know, well off, well endowed, happy is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Which is talking about one aspect of having children and the blessing of children, but there's so many others of the joy that this fruit from this marriage brings to your life. And all of us here, most of us here, I think, realize that or have lived that. And I think I said before, my favorite verse now, grandchildren are the crown of the aged, and the glory of children is their fathers. My crown. Where's my crown? Oh, I think they're in class. Anyway, my crown. I love wearing my crown. Took my crown down to the beach the other day. Built some sandcastles. Watched the water come in. They were freaked out. Water coming in. It goes into the moat first, and then it comes up. And Cyrus and I had a contest. Whose castle was going to be above the water the longest? I lost. But I didn't care. So anyway, whatever. This crown. For a lot of reasons, not just the fun time you can have at the beach, but the part in their life, in your life, that they bring the joy, the glory, the goodness that they can bring. Wonderful blessing children can be. All this talks about that, right? But even with that being the case, it's important to see. It's important to realize, with all the responsibility that children bring, it should not. Interfere with the closest relationship God has made. And this is what marriage is. We look here at this passage and we can see that. We're going to just look at this very familiar passage we've used here. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she would be holy and blameless. So husbands ought to also love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no one hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. Nourishes and cherishes, because we are members of his body. There's no closer relationship that you can find in the Bible than that one. No closer physical relationship than a husband and his wife. It's like Christ and the church. Okay? Very next verse, verse 31. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother. What? You mean we don't stay dad and son forever underneath my wing here? And no, we don't. He goes out. The very reason we've got a marriage, right? One of the very reasons is to be fruitful, and so that this guy actually gets out of town. He leaves. Well, not out of town. Stay in town. Don't go out of town. Well, Ording's a different town. I guess you can do that. Auburn's good. That's all right. Don't go too far. But anyway, they leave. That's the way it's designed. The fruit comes off the tree and goes somewhere else. That's the way it should be. That as close as I am to my son and my daughter, it's not as close. It's not as close or as lasting a relationship. And, you know, a man leaves, but a husband and wife, however, let no man separate. Difference there. So when you talk about this close relationship, man and a woman, until the end of days, till the end of your life. Children, they go away. They're still your children. I realize that, but not in the full sense of the word, where they're still in your home, in your family, under your authority. That changes. And so it's important to see that, because then there's a priority in the marriage that we don't want to let get second, which is loving our wife, making her happy. All the things we've talked about for months in this class, wives, husbands to wives to husbands, you don't let that lag behind. Now, you're going to sacrifice some of the time together. You don't have as many opportunities to do things together, just the two of you, as you used to. That's the way it is. It's not that's a sacrifice you need to make, but you can't let that responsibility undone. Let's see here. Well, let's look at a few more verses and make some comments here about that. What are we doing for time? Good. There are a lot of responsibilities with children. It's going to take some of your time that you used to have together. Ed, go ahead.
I was thinking of the passage of the older women teach the younger women, to love their husbands. Mm-hmm. Child became the number one priority.
Mm-hmm. That happens a lot.
Way like just in second, and it affected the marriage to the point of, in one case, it's a cousin kind of thing.
Yeah.
There was a divorce over.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, that separated it because, the husband was like, hey, this is not what I.
Yeah. So should never, ever happen. And that's what we're talking about these couple of verses here that we looked at, is that relationship between a husband and wife, children should never, ever supplant that. There's a different relationship there that's wonderful and good, and they're the fruit that's produced, but God has put this man and a woman together for their life. And all those things we've talked about as far as the devotion, the sacrifices, everything, if I could go back over and look at it in a moment, I would. Those can't be undone. You never want to have children get priority in a marriage. Doesn't mean things don't change. Instead of two now, there's three or four or five, right? And that makes things different. And that's a common problem. That's a common failing in our marriages, is that for some reason we leave behind the priority of our relationship with our spouse and focus completely or almost entirely on our children. Terry.
I think the problem between the husband and the wife is there are some Bible been working on the marriage itself.
Can happen that way. But not always. Not always. In some very good marriages that are going along, children come along, and of course they're wonderful, darling, charming little things that you just want to love, love, love. And if you're not careful and you don't practice discipline, then you don't divide your time properly. You don't divide your attention properly. And that's something we don't want to fall into. And that is a trap that people do fall into. And we don't want to do that. Okay? We'll talk about in a second a few things you can do to avoid that. And when there's a chance, there's only so much time. Who's got more than 24 hours in their day? Raise your hand. Oh, man, I was hoping there was somebody, because I want to know how you do it. But nobody here. 24 hours a day. So much time to give to him or her, your wife or your husband. So much time to give to your children and the neighbors and whatever else you got. So there's things, there's way to manage this. Let's just realize for a second, there's a lot of responsibilities with these cute little guys. One of them is teaching them. Roger went through this in his lesson a few weeks ago. These words back here in Deuteronomy 6, verse 6 and 7, these words which I am commanding you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them as you sit in your when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up. Does that sound kind of like all-consuming there? It does. Constantly, you're going to be working with these children. Because this fruit, you want to be good fruit. You don't want to be rotten fruit. You want it to be good fruit. So you've got a lot of time here that's going to be taken just to raise these things up. And that's not even counting all the physical things you need to provide for. Lee.
Husbands and wives need to be on the same page regarding their children.
Yep.
Yes, from one, but go to the other one.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
And who's in charge in that home?
The husband.
The husband is. And how is he in charge? He just domineers. He lovingly considers all that his wife and children say and then makes a decision God holds him responsible to make. So, exactly. Right. And then you have unity, right? God, the unity God has designed, not just that you come up with. It's God's unity. Okay, so all-consuming. Here we got train up a child, verse 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he was old, he will not depart from it. So it's like all the years you've got this guy, and then when he departs, or this gal, okay, I've done my job. Wore myself out training up these kids. Now they're on their own. It's a lot of work, a lot of time. Could distract from your responsibilities and your affection and devotion to your wife, but you can't let it do that. You can't let that do that. My old neighbor, actually, he was the man who had the company that I worked for years. His sons took it over after a number of years back. But my old neighbor, when he had his first kid, he gave up golf. He loved golfing. Golf probably every weekend or if he could. Gave up golf. He didn't golf again until after his last child was gone out of the house. 30-some years later, I can't know exactly, didn't golf again. And then just almost the very month after, he was out golfing. That man, he wasn't a Christian, gave up something he loved in order to provide the association and the time. And he was great with his kids. I happened to be the neighbor kid, and I was always included in whatever they did. And he was always there, excited about being involved with his kids. And he was great with his wife, too. But he sacrificed something he really enjoyed doing. And it wasn't his marriage, right? It was something he enjoyed that was a recreation that he just loved for years before he had children. That's how you do it. You sacrifice something else that's important to you. The time that you did this, or I used to work on cars, and now, you know, maybe when little Johnny is 16, I can work on cars again because he might like that. But you don't work on cars if that's what it takes to give time to both have to spend on your spouse and on your children. Or maybe it's some sport that you're really into that basically they're not, you know, I mean, you could go on and on and see. But there are ways that you can sacrifice. And ladies, the same thing too. I'm thinking from a man's perspective there, but the same thing. So that, you know, your own, here's the secret, let me tell you. Make it your joy and your enthusiastic joy in life be your family. Make that happen. I mean, if it used to be golfing, then golfing, fine. Well, forget about golf. Make the everyday relationship and time you spend with your family be the thing that fills you up as you live as Christians together. Do that. And then it won't hurt so much that you can't golf anymore, you know, or you don't golf anymore. Because what you really are enjoying is your family. Andrew.
Sometimes the man is his own worst enemy when it comes to this type of a thing because he expects his wife to
Yeah.
And not, I was going to go out and earn money
for sure.
The family and all that. And it's the wife's job to take care of the house and take care of the kids. And then he wonders why he's doing whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
I know Dan knows why Bart couldn't get ready for church on time.
Yeah.
And because he'd be there and he'd have his breakfast and he'd be ready to go. One time he just got so upset with her, he left her. And he left her home because she wasn't on time. The problem was is that he wasn't helping her get the kids ready and get the kids breakfast and do all that as well as getting herself ready.
Yeah.
And it took him a little, that was a...
I mean, that's a big duh, you know,
yeah,
I mean, yeah.
Big,
figure it out.
It was an eye-opening experience for him when he finally got home. But the thing is that so often we figure like our job is keeping an immaculate lawn or doing, you know, doing all this.
Yeah.
And expecting our wife to take care of everything else.
Yeah. If you're going to let something suffer, let the lawn suffer. If you have to let something suffer, let the lawn suffer. Let the flowers suffer. And I know I'm not a big horticultural guy, and I wouldn't cry a tear over any flower. Some people would. But I know they're not as important as my wife and my children. I'm that sharp. I'm not very sharp, but I'm that sharp. So, yeah, exactly. That's what you do. These are some wise things that you would do. So, guys, make your family your hobby. I mean, not just your responsibility. And so, I'm saying, give up all those little things you like to do for now. Find something you can do with them. And then you'll find 24 hours. Let me tell you, is anybody saying here 24 hours a day is not enough to love your wife or your husband and to love your children? Raise your hand if you don't think that's enough time. To give them your all. God made a mistake. Somebody raise your hand. Tell me, God made a mistake. It should have been 30 hours and I would have had enough time. Now, nobody's going to say that. No one's going to challenge God. There's enough time to love your wife, your husband, and to love your children like you should. I'm running close on time. Let me throw this one out there. This is kind of a teaser. But what if you had a situation where your wife and your, this is going to be unfair, I know. Where your wife and your child, just 10 feet in front of you, are dangling from a cliff, and you could only save one of them, which one would you save? Andrew says your wife. I'm not even going to give you my answer, but which one would your wife hanging there next to your child say to save? Okay. So, realize then too that as and hopefully you do this as a unit, you willingly sacrifice that's an extreme situation. You willingly sacrifice some of your one-on-one time for your children. That's good. Sacrificing is good. So you don't have as much time. You still have good time, but you don't have as much time. You're giving some of that to your kids. I mean, that's just part of it. So not only are you going to sacrifice your hobbies, right, that you need to, but yeah, you're not going to have as much time as when you were just two. You're just not. So, anyway, God made it possible for us to love our families the way we should, to love our spouse the way we should, and at the same very time, to love 10 children, if that's how many you've got. And there's some who have that many. Maybe not in this group. Used to be some in this group. Yeah. Made it possible. So we can do it. But don't fall into that trap of letting children get in the way of a good marriage. Because a good relationship between husband and wife. That's it. We're done. 24 minutes after, I'm a minute early. That's a pretty good plan, huh? Okay. Next week. Actually, I wish I had a few minutes. I didn't say get up yet. I'm not done talking. I'm done with my outline. Go ring the bell. Subject we're going to be getting into next week, starting next week, which will go for a number of weeks, divorce and remarriage. I'm not taking away stuff you need to say, but it's one of the most controversial subjects there is among the brotherhood. We, Andrew and I, do not want it to be a division in this congregation. Don't let it be. You can disagree on some of these very controversial subjects and still be brethren. So I'm just going to say, he's going to get up there, probably the first thing he's going to say is something similar. I'm just want to tell you now, that's exactly what I think. And I think any spiritual leader, that's been here would say the same thing. There's going to be some difficult, it's a difficult subject. And it's not just in one area of marriage and divorce, it's in a number of areas of marriage or divorce and remarriage. And so patience and forbearance as we look at these things. And at the end of the class, we may not all be on the same page on everything. Don't need to be. Our desire is we want to follow this the best we can. And where we disagree as we're growing, we forbear each other. So come prepared with a forbearing spirit. Start next Sunday. You ready to start next Sunday?
Yeah, sure.